Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Emily Lawler. Emily, I was on vacation this week, and I come back, and what a treat. You've already got two interviews scheduled for us.
I do my best for you, Kyle.
Well, the first one we talked to is Brian Ellis. He's a candidate in the 3rd Congressional District going up against Justin Amash. He's got a competitive primary there on the Republican side. And you were also able to talk with somebody from the Department of Natural Resources.
Yeah, Ron Olson is the director of all the parks programs over there, and we talked a little bit about what occupancy rates looked like on this busy 4th of July weekend. I don't think you stayed in any parks, did you, this weekend?
No, I didn't. I did visit a natural... I think it's a national lakeshore, the Sleeping Bear Dunes.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
that's not state parks.
It's not.
But it's very cool, though.
It is very cool, and I enjoy going there once a year as well. It's better in the fall, by the way.
Is it really?
I love the leaves, and I'm a fall person.
I've never been there in the fall. Yeah. I've been there in the winter. I froze my butt off up there going up one day.
Did you ski down the dunes or anything?
No, I wanted to, but it was so cold. I think I just did it to do it. I've never seen that. I've never seen that park so busy as...
Really?
Yeah, as when we went on... What day was that? It was on Thursday, so it had been the 3rd.
Dang, wow.
Every space was filled. They were parking in odd locations.
Well, Ron Olson's going to tell us which parks typically fill up over the 4th of July weekend, and also talk a little bit about Belle Isle and how that's changed under DNR management.
All right, let's listen to the first interview here, one with Brian Ellis.
Join me on the other end of the line, Brian Ellis, candidate for the 3rd Congressional District in Grand Rapids. Appreciate you being on the phone with us today, sir.
Glad to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. Here we are here only a month away from the primary. I wanted to get your impressions on how you feel here in your race in the 3rd Congressional District against the incumbent, Justin Amash.
Yeah, I'm feeling great. I mean, as I travel around the district, I mean, I'm getting great reception. What I talk about on the campaign trail is... resonating with people that, you know, we have a representative that doesn't vote the conservative values of our district. You know, I talk about, for example, he didn't support a balanced budget amendment. He didn't support small business tax cuts. He didn't support Keystone Pipeline. He's not been supportive on the life issue. These themes are resonating as I tell people that I will vote for those items in particular and many more beyond that.
Now, we've personally done a poll here at MERS that has shown that your opponent is up by about 20 percentage points, and I know there's been at least another one done. Is it discouraging to see that you're not closer than you'd probably want to be?
Not to me. I mean, that would be discouraging on election night, but we're not on election night.
Sure.
We still have a ways to go. And every day, my campaign is built on momentum, gaining momentum from one day to the next, and so far that's been the case. Each day is a little bit better than the day before it, and we're building the momentum and getting the word out about the campaign, and people are coming my way, so I'm gratified for that, and we'll see where we're at on August 5th.
As far as doing some of the education here on some of the votes of the current congressman, do you feel like his positions that he's taking, which are very much like on this Ron Paul variety, do you think that is a philosophy that is gaining traction with the general public, this very much strict right-wing, almost libertarian type philosophy?
It is libertarian. It's not almost. It is.
Okay. Is that where voters are heading as far as Republicans and kind of to this libertarian-type philosophy?
Well, here's how I look at it. Justin is on record as saying he wants to be the next Ron Paul. Ron Paul got 10% of the vote in the February 2012 presidential primary. So Justin, that's his right if he wants to be just like Ron Paul, but he's a long way from a majority of Republicans. And so, you know, I can't gauge whether it's gaining more hold or not, but it's got a long way to go to represent the majority of this district. So when you don't side with life, and this is a pro-life district, when you don't side with small business tax cuts, when you don't side with something like the Keystone Pipeline, I mean, I don't care what you're philosophical bent is, you're out of step with this district.
How do you get this to maybe a wider audience that, my goodness, this guy is completely, you know, backward from where the majority of voters in this district really are?
Well, that's the whole basis of the campaign. I'm trying to be very careful and talk about his votes. I don't believe in tearing him down personally or attacking him personally, but I do believe his voting record is fair game, and so we're trying to point that out through different mediums and different ways to show that he's out of touch, and I don't believe if people truly knew how Justin has voted that he would have the support to win, and that's what the campaign is based on.
Has this been tougher than you thought it would be?
No, it's about what I thought. I mean,
is that right?
It's a 24/7, a lot of hard work, but that's not anything new to me. I mean, in my business career, I mean, I've worked very long hours in order to be successful and execute the game plans I had in place for business, and the campaign is similar. So no, it's not been any harder at all.
Debates. How has he been as far as agreeing to debates? Is that something that we're going to see anything of in the next month here in the 3rd Congressional District?
Well, he's gone back on his word.
Okay.
So we had an impromptu radio debate earlier in the year, and at the end of that, they both asked us, would you debate further? We both said yes. I was just on a radio station last week, and Justin was a no-show. I just was on another show last night. He was a no-show. And so, you know, this is how I've conducted myself my whole life. I'm true to my word. I said I would debate. I think debates are part of the political process. And Justin Amash is doing a great disservice to everyone in the 3rd District and is completely disrespectful, frankly, of the voters of the 3rd District by going back on his word and not debating. It's wrong.
Why do you think he's dodging you?
Well, he's got a horrendous voting record, like I've talked about. I mean, he's sideways with on the life issue. In fact, Right to Life is endorsing my campaign, and they pulled their endorsement of him, as have many other organizations. So when you go down the list of his voting records, it's pretty indefensible, and he does not want to come on and have to try and defend a horrendous voting record.
Now, he would argue, though, that he is not going to vote in support or against the bill, that he isn't completely read. Is there something redeeming about that quality, that you're not going to vote on something unless you've read it?
Well, somehow everybody else seems to get through it, and that's what he has a paid staff that we're all paying for through our tax dollars. So he has himself and his staff that each and every one of us is paying for, and they have to figure out a way to get through these bills like everybody else. And so I think that's wrong, and that becomes a convenient crutch, because one could always say that, and how do you verify that? So I think that's just a cop-out. And, you know, frankly, another cop-out he uses is voting present on bills.
Right.
I took a pledge when I announced I was running for Congress, I'll never vote present. I mean, when he votes present, what he's saying is he's physically present, but none of us in the 3rd District are, because I'm not taking a vote on your behalf. I'm copping out and not taking a stand, yes or no. And I think, again, he's wrong, and he's out of touch, and he's not representing the voters when he does that.
Now, he would say he's being principled with this here, because he is hasn't gotten through the bill and it doesn't feel comfortable weighing in one way or the other. Principled is a word that we hear quite a bit, that he's sticking with his principles. Is there anything redeeming in somebody who isn't going to buck his political views?
Well, that's not the issue. The issue is doing your work. You have a paid staff to help you accomplish your job as our representative, and when you vote present, you're not representing us. Then he runs around and says he's got a perfect voting record. Give me a break. He's got dozens of present votes, and dozens of present votes on very key issues. And I'd like to remind everybody, who else took a lot of present votes as a cop-out the president when he was in the legislature. This is wrong. This is wrong.
Now, the last thing I wanted to ask you about here, obviously Justin Amash is also sideways with Republican leadership. Is there something to be said for somebody who is going to stick by their guns and what they believe in, even if it puts them on the wrong side of leadership?
Good question. I think the way I look at it is I represent the voters of the 3rd District, and if that puts me at odds with leadership, then so be it. But Justin is just being an obstructionist to be an obstructionist, and that's where it's wrong. I mean, you know, if the 3rd District residents or citizens, I'm representing them, were against leadership, then so be it. I don't really care about that. I'm not there for leadership. I'm there for the residents of the 3rd District, period. But I'm not there for myself.
Okay.
And that's what I think we have going on right now.
Very good. Brian Ellis, candidate in the 3rd Congressional District. Appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
Sure, anytime.
All right, and I'm here with DNR Parks and Recreation Chief Ron Olson, talking about kind of some of the occupancy rates at state parks this holiday weekend. Ron, how'd it go? How full were the parks this weekend?
Just before the weekend started, we were about just over 93% occupied, which is a good number. It's up a little bit from last year. And that last year, we were up over the 2012. So for the 4th of July weekend, it was good. And the weather was great. And we'll get the reconciliation number. And that what that really basically means is minusing out how many cancellations there may have been. But due to the good weather, we think we may even the number may have even gotten greater for last-minute people deciding.
So, and that's up over previous years. If my recollections are right, they've been around the high 80s for the last couple of years. Is that right?
Yeah, last year was in the high 80s, and so this year, like I said, was about a little over 93%, so it's up.
Gotcha. And which parks tend not to fill up, you know, if there's a 7 or 8% that don't fill up, which parks do you see that at?
Well, at this time of the year, while the Upper Peninsula, certain parks get like Tequamanon Falls and mm-hmm. some of the others tend to get a fair amount of action, some of the parks fill up a little bit later as the weather gets better and things like that. So some of the Upper Peninsula parks, and then there are a few scattered around in the Lower Peninsula that don't always fill as readily as some of the others.
What does the DNR do in terms of letting people know which parks still have spots available on a high-traffic holiday weekend?
Well, obviously you can go on the website and you can go on the reservation system and peruse the parks that you're interested in, and it'll tell you what's available, how many sites and where they are and things like that. And you can actually see the sites that you're intending to book. We sometimes will put out news releases out to the media to alert people that there's still opportunities to go. And also some people will call the parks and ask directly what's available. But it's a combination of ways to get the word out.
Yeah. And is 4th of July your typically the busiest weekend, or does it get some pretty stiff competition from Memorial Day, Labor Day, and...
Well, the 4th of July weekend is usually one of the bigger ones. The Memorial Day is a little bit lesser because people are starting in, and some of the northern parks, the weather is still not up to what it is in July. And then Labor Day is still pretty strong, but people are starting to, those that have children in school and things like that, sometimes they will go out and make their last camp out, but sometimes it does curtail a little bit because of getting ready to switch gears. So really the 4th of July is one of the more vibrant weekends or periods we have.
Well, I don't think there's camping there, but I wanted to ask you, too, about how Belle Isle Park is doing since the DNR has taken that park under its wing there.
Well, it's doing well. We've been able to do a lot of basic things. We reopened almost all the bathrooms on the islands, a few that have some more extensive repairs, but by and large, we have that. We've added a lot of litter cans and done a lot of basic things just to bring it up. Of course, we have partners with the Michigan State Police and the conservation officers to provide law enforcement on a consistent basis. And so all in all, it's coming along quite nicely. We got a lot more to do and things like that. And we've been working with the advisory group and other groups in the community. We've had listening sessions and other things to try to engage as much as we can with the community. But it's gradually but evolving in a positive direction.
And has that had any impact on the recreation passport? People get on their vehicles to get into state parks. Has the Detroit area seen any sort of an increase?
Yes. The zip codes in the city of Detroit, for example, the percentage of the eligible vehicles for the passport a year ago was about, we had about 8.5% participation rate. Now it's 1 year later, because of the transformation of Belle Isle, because we started this, we assumed management of it February 10th. The numbers a year later have gone up to 34% participation. So it's been a dramatic increase, and we believe it's a lot to be associated with Belle Isle.
Wow. And is that 34% you mentioned higher or lower than the statewide average for adoption?
Oh, that's right up there. In terms of the increase, it's been one of the greater ones. Now, we've had participation rates in some of the areas in the northern part of the state, but the population per percent is smaller. So this is one of the certainly the largest increase, but it rivals a lot of the in terms of actual numbers of cars. It's very positive.
All right. Well, thanks so much for checking in with us on this. And I'm going to Belle Isle in a couple weeks, so I hope to see some of the improvements myself.
All right. Well, fantastic. Thank you very
much. All right. Thanks so much, John.
Bye-bye.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to Ron Olson and Brian Ellis and Emily Lawler for hooking up these interviews. How did you guys do last week, by the way? It looked like the editions looked all right.
I think so, Kyle.
I don't know why I was reading them on vacation, but I was anyway.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. You know, I'm not sure we've billed ourselves as a beach reading outlet, but if you're willing to pioneer the practice, maybe we can put that on our ads or something.
Maybe that's something that we can advertise later, right?
Yeah.
A little light beach reading? I don't know.
We're going to need a picture of you with your tablet on the beach enjoying some surf.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think so. That's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. I'm Kyle Malin. We'll see you next week. Take care.